Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part Faculty of Social Sciences. Now I'm going to record the next poet of the poetry, Alfred Lord Tennyson. The poet of the age, the poet of the phase, the national poet, the poet laureate, Alfred Lord Tennyson has been regarded as one of the greatest poets in the whole of English poetry. No doubt, he is the harbinger of muse in England in Victorian era. How poetic, now musical, how lyrical, how classical he is. He is the genius of social, political, religious, cultural, philosophic and scientific sphere. He is a perfect poet. He believes in the theory of idea and idealism. His soul of poetry is humanism. His heart of poetry is rhythmical. His mind of poetry is philosophical and his body of the poetry is beautiful. His diction is delightful. His style is celestial. His figure is flowering. His rhyme is tuneful. Thus, Alfred Lord Tennyson is a born poet. Now, his life and works. Alfred Lord Tennyson was born in 1809. He was the son of Reverend George Tennyson, rector of the parish at Somersby. For his education, Tennyson was sent to South, where he stayed in the house of his maternal grandfather so that he could attend the grammar school. But in 1820, he returned from there and began to study under the guidance of his father. His father taught him classics, languages, fine arts, mathematics, and natural sciences. His father had an excellent library where he studied Shakespeare, Milton, Bunyan, Burke, Goldsmith, Edison, Swift, and Defoe, etc. Tennyson published many books, among them In Memoriam, Ode on the Death of the Duke of Wellington, The Charge of the Light Brigade, Idylls of the King, Ulysses, The Lotus Eaters, The Lady of Shalott, 1-1, The Place of Art, The Dream of Fair Women, The Mary Queen, so on and so forth. Tennyson published his first volume of verse in 1830. 62 years later he wrote, "Sunset and evening star and one clear call for me. I hope to see my pilot face to face when I have crossed the bar." Finally, he died on October 6, 1892 as the greatest poet of the Victorian poets. Now, the Tennyson as a representative poet of the age. Lord Alfred Tennyson has been regarded as the most representative poet of the Victorian era. As Stopford Brooke has said, for more than 60 years he lived to present the life of England as far as he was capable of comprehending and sympathizing with its moment, and he invoked what he felt concerning into his poetry. The extraordinary liveliness of his work is itself typical of the immense complexity of his age. In 1842, Tennyson published a book named Locksley Hall. There he presents the restless spirit of young England and of its faith in science, commerce, and the progress of mankind. In The Princess, he grapples with one of the rising questions of the day, that of the higher education of women and their place in the fast-changing condition of modern society. Maud quivers with the patriotic passion of the time of the Crimean War and with the general ferment which follows this. It also reflects the Mammon's worship of the day in the Idylls of the King. While the medieval melancholy is restrained, the old story is turned into a parable, the lessons of which have a direct bearing upon contemporary life. The changes which Tennyson's thought underwent in regard to social and political questions itself reveals his curious sensitiveness to the tendencies of his time for the sanguine temper of his early manhood, the doubts, the misgivings and reactionary utterances of his middle age, and the chastened hopefulness of his last years are alike reflections of successive moods which were widely characteristic of his generation. As Hudson writes, both politically and socially he stands out as one of the poetic exponents of the customs and spirit of Victorian liberalism, passion for law and orderly progress. Tennyson was essentially the poet of law and order as well as of progress. He held tenaciously to the great heritage of English tradition, and he firmly believed in the divine scheme of things. The older order changed, yielding place to new, and God fulfills himself in many ways, lest one good custom should corrupt the world. He was quite firmly opposed to raw haste, rash experiments, and everything that savored of revolutions. Tennyson's poetry is often the vehicle of spreading democratic sympathies of Victorian England. Recluse and aristocratic as he was profoundly interested in common people and common things, and it is not the least significant feature of his work as a whole that along with The Princess Maud, The Idylls of the King, contain such things as the May Queen, Enoch Arden, Dove, etc. Evolutionary Science. While Tennyson's poetry is thus historically interesting as reflecting the social and political trends of his age, it is even more important as a record of the intellectual and spiritual life of the times. As a careful student of science and philosophy, he was deeply impressed by the far-reaching meaning of the new discoveries and speculations by which the edifice of old thought was being undermined. More especially was he impressed by the wide inclinations of the doctrine of evolution. He was peculiarly fitted to be the mouthpiece of his century's doubts, difficulties and cravings for the centuries of religious faith. He represents the Victorian spirit when he writes, "Let knowledge grow from more to more, but more of reverence in us dwell." The two vices, sciences and religion of that century, are perpetually heard in his work In Memoriam. More than in any other contemporary piece of verse or prose, we may read of the great conflict of the age between doubt and faith, while in many later poems, as in The Ancient Sage, we may see how the poet challenged the current materialism and asserted the eternal varieties of God and immortality. His greatness as an artist. Alfred Lord Tennyson is a great representative, but he is still greater as an artist. He was the most careful writer, revising what he had written again and again. Among the elements which make up his art, and the following may be mentioned. First, a minute observation of nature which furnished him with a store of poetic description and imagery. Second, a scholarly appreciation of all that is the most picturesque in the literature of the past. Third, an exquisite precision in the use of words and phrases. Fourth, the picturesqueness and aptness of smiles, similes. Fifth, an avoidance of the commonplace. Sixth, his use of repetition and resonance. Seventh, the expressive harmonies of his rhyme. Eighth, the subtle melody of his diction. Now, music and melody. Praising Tennyson as a literary artist, Albert writes, "No one excels Tennyson in the deft application of sound to sense and in the subtle and pervading employment of alliteration and vowel music. Such passages as this abound in his work: the moan of doves in memorable elms and murmuring of innumerable bees." His excellent craftsmanship is also apparent in his handling of English meters, in which he is tireless experimenter. Word painting. In his word painting, Tennyson follows Keats. His method is to seize upon the appropriate details, dress them in expressive and musical phrases, and thus throw a glistening image before the reader's eyes. Such ornate descriptions reveal Tennyson at his best, but once again the doubt arises as to whether they represent the highest poetry. They show exactness of observation and a rare loveliness of epithet. Nature poetry. Tennyson is a great and original nature poet. The Lotus Eaters is the best example of his anterior landscape painting. The poem displays his unrivaled power of observation. Tennyson is simply superb in using nature to intensify human moods. His skill in landscape painting is remarkable. The whole landscape is vivified through a few apt touches. His lyric gift. Modern critic believes that the best of Tennyson is not to be found in his longer and more ambitious poems, but in his lyrics. The typical Tennyson lyric is a lyric of mood, a poem which is rendered in terms of natural setting. Tennyson wrote lyrics of many kinds. In Memoriam is a long elegy composed of many short lyrics. His best of lyric can be seen in his poem like Break, 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 Crossing the Bar, and The Princess. As a poet of humanism, he presents humanism at the highest rate. He loves nationalism. 2. All his best men are of one pattern: noble, courteous, chivalrous, and little deficient in force and passion, yet bold and adventure and temperate in success. The pattern, in short, is of just such an English gentleman as Tennyson himself was. Thus, Tennyson has been regarded as one of the best literary artists and has been placed as the most representative poet of his age. Now, the first poem of the Alfred Lord Tennyson, Tithonus. First of all, the summary of the poem. In the present poem, Tithonus, the poet Alfred Lord Tennyson expresses his idea about a Greek legend character, Tithonus. According to him, everything in his world obeys the natural law of meeting its own end. The woods decay and fall on the ground where they fall. Man comes and tills the fields, and after his death is buried beneath them. The swan lives for a couple of years and then dies. This is the divine law on the earth. But once upon a time there was a man whose name was Tithonus. He possessed beauty. It is because of his beauty that he could attract Eos, the goddesses of dawn, to fall in love with him. His matchless beauty led him to think that he was not a man but a god. With a fervent hope, he had asked his beloved Eos to give him immortality. Eos pleaded in favor of him before Zeus, the god of gods, and obtained from him immortality for Tithonus. All this was good and fair for him for a time, but gradually he realized that he was not like other gods who were immortal like him. The other gods were particularly young, though immortal. Tithonus grew old and in course of time experienced the pain and sufferings of old age. His skin became wrinkled, his stooped under the weight of years. At last he pleaded before his lady love Eos to take back her gift of immortality. The goddess Eos, who was more affected by the suffering than the love of Tithonus, was full of tears in her eyes. In spite of her desire to relieve him from his pain and suffering, she could not do anything for him. She could not check his advancing old age, nor his wrinkles growing every day. She considered with attention that what she could do to remove his distress. Tithonus pleaded earnestly to be given back his mortality so that he could die like other human beings somewhere in this world and be relieved from the anxiety of the perpetual suffering owing to the coming of unending old age. He wanted to be released and restored to the ground. He wanted her to see his grief from above and forget him and renew her life of giving bright light of the east to all the world. He did not want her to be aggrieved on his account and slackness in her duty, giving morning light to every plant and every living being on earth. Since a god cannot take back his gift, his beloved goddess Eos released him from the pain of living a wretched life by making him a grasshopper. हिंदी सारांश प्रस्तुत कविता टिथोनस के अंतर्गत कवि अल्फ्रेड लॉर्ड टेनिसन ग्रीक पौराणिक कथा के एक प्रसिद्ध चरित्र टिथोनस का वर्णन करता है। उसके अनुसार इस संसार में प्रत्येक वस्तु प्राकृतिक नियमों एवं कानूनों का पालन करती है, साथ ही अपने अंत को प्राप्त करती है। जंगल समाप्त हो जाते हैं और जमीन पर ढह जाते हैं। जहाँ वे गिरते हैं मनुष्य आते हैं और जमीन को खोद देते हैं और वे भी मृत्यु के पश्चात दफना दिए जाते हैं। हंस भी कुछ दिन जीवित रहते हैं, पुनः मर जाते हैं। यह मृत्यु पृथ्वी का नैसर्गिक कानून है। किंतु एक बार की बात है, एक व्यक्ति था जिसका नाम टिथोनस था। वह सुंदरता का धनी था। इससे इयास, जो प्रातःकाल की देवी थी, प्रेम करने लगी। उसकी अद्वितीय सुंदरता ने उसे सोचने पर मजबूर कर दिया था कि वह एक सामान्य व्यक्ति ना होकर देवतुल्य आभा से युक्त है। उसने अपनी प्रेमिका इयास से अमृत प्रदान करने को कहा। इयास ने उसके बारे में देवताओं के देवता जियोस से प्रार्थना की और टिथोनस के लिए अमृत प्रदान कर लिया। यह सब आनंद भाव कुछ समय के लिए था, किंतु धीरे धीरे उसे ज्ञात हुआ कि वह अन्य देवताओं की भांति नहीं है। दूसरे देवता जो तो युवा प्रतीत हो रहे हैं, किंतु वह धीरे धीरे वृद्धावस्था को प्राप्त हो रहा है। उसे अनेक कष्ट और दुख का आभास होने लगा। उसकी त्वचा सिकुड़ने लगी है, उसके ऊपर उम्र का प्रभाव पड़ने लगा है। अंत में उसने अपनी प्रेमिका इयास से प्रार्थना की उसके अमृत्यु का वरदान वह वापस ले ले। देवी इयास भी उसके दुखों से प्रभावित थी। उसने टिथोनस की आंखों में आंसू देखा। अपनी इच्छा के बावजूद भी वह टिथोनस की सहायता करने को तैयार थी। वह उसके लिए कुछ भी कर सकती थी। वह बढ़ती वृद्धावस्था को तो रोक नहीं सकती थी, ना तो प्रतिदिन बढ़ती हुई उसकी झुर्रियों को ही रोक सकती थी। उसने इस पर गंभीरता से विचार किया, वह उसके कष्ट को दूर करने के लिए क्या कर सकती है। टिथोनस ने उसे मृत्यु प्रदान करने को कहा ताकि वह मर सके अन्य व्यक्तियों के समान। उसकी वृद्धावस्था को रोकने का कोई उपाय नहीं था। वह अपनी भूमि में दफन होना चाहता था। वह जीवन से मुक्ति चाहता था। वह अपनी कब्र देखना चाहता था और उसे भूल जाना चाहता था तथा संसार से मुक्ति पाना चाहता था। वह अपने से अब किसी को दुख नहीं प्रदान करना चाहता था, ना तो दुख का प्रकाश प्रदान करना चाहता था। कोई देवता अपने द्वारा प्रदत्त उपहार को पुनः वापस नहीं ले सकता था, इसलिए देवी यौस ने उसे टिड्डा बनाकर उसके दुखों को दूर करने का प्रयत्न किया। नाउ द डिस्क्रिप्शन ऑफ द पोएम। इन द प्रेजेंट पोएम टिथोनस द पोएट अल्फ्रेड लॉर्ड टेनिसन प्रेजेंट्स अ वेरी फिलोसॉफिकल एटीट्यूड टुवर्ड्स द लाइफ। इन द बिगिनिंग ऑफ द पोएम ही राइट्स The woods decay and fall, the vapors weep their burden to the ground. Man comes and tills the fields and lies beneath, and after many a summer dies the sun. The world is mortal, nothing will remain forever. Everything in this world obeys the natural law of meeting its own end. The woods decay and fall on the ground, mists cover the ground where they fall. Man comes and tills the fields, and after his death is buried beneath them. The swan lives for a couple of years and dies. Here the poet wants to say that nothing is immortal on the earth, but Tithonus is an exception. He was the most handsome person and possessed beauty. It is because of his superb beauty that he could attract Eos, the goddess of dawn, to fall in love with him. His matchless beauty led him to think that he was not a man but a god. With fervent hope, he asked his beloved Eos to give him immortality. Eos pleaded in favor of him before Zeus, the god of gods, and obtained from him immortality for Tithonus. Eos presents the gift of immortality to Tithonus, but in course of time his mortal body gets wrinkled and withered. Gods have eternal youth. Human beings are destined to die. His place is the earth, where he now wishes to return to die. He appeals to Eos to take back her gift of immortality. He must die as well as all men do and be released from the eternal torture associated with old age. As the poet points out, let me go, take back the gift. Why should a man desire in any way to vary from the kindly race of man? But the greatest problem is before the gods that they cannot take back their gift. The sufferings of Tithonus are dual. He suffers because his beloved Eos deeply feels for the pain. He suffers. He suffers under the physical weight of old age, which crushes him down day by day more and more. He seeks relief from his unbearable pain, which is so natural for a man in his stage. The theme of the poem is, if we do anything unnatural, there is no doubt pain in due course of time. Tithonus has been given the power of immortality, but he has not been given the eternal youth as gods possesses forever and ever, so he requests Eos to take back her gift, but it is totally impossible for her to take back the gift. She also cannot bear the pain and agony of his old age, so she turns him into a grasshopper. Thus, she removes his pain and troubles. The philosophy of the poem is that no human being should accept any unnatural thing that will be the cause of restlessness. Tithonus became fully restless due to the troubles of the crabbed age. Though the death is away from him due to the blessings of God of the gods, Zeus, but he was not free from the effect of the old age. Ultimately, he has been turned into a grasshopper by the beloved Eos, only to make him free from misery and agony and restlessness. So far as the artistic point of view is concerned, Tithonus is no doubt one of the most significant poems which has ever been written by A.L. Tennyson. There is music, there is mysticism, there is magic, and there is melodiousness. Every line of the poem is lyrical. The words which have been chosen by Tennyson are no doubt superb. Yet there is simplicity, there is loveliness, and there is sweetness in every line. For example, I love thee freely as man strive for right. I love thee purely as they turn from praise. I love thee with the passion but to use in my old griefs and with my childhood's faith. In the above lines, the poet Tennyson has presented simple, lovely, and sweet words with grave philosophical meanings. The style of the poem is descriptive and deductive. His historical and philosophical, religious and mythological, it has been also presented in the form of dialogue. So far as figures are concerned, there are alliteration, simile, metaphor, personification, and apostrophe, etc. The poem is written in blank verse, yet there are lyricism and melodiousness. Thus, the poem Tithonus is a poem of high rank. There is all what the best poem possesses. No doubt it is one of the best poems of Alfred Lord Tennyson. Now, the explanations of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. The woods decay, and fall. The vapors weep their burden to the ground. Man comes and tills the field and lies beneath. And after many a summer dies the swan. My only cruel immortality consumes, wither slowly in thine arms. Here at the quiet limit of the world, a white-haired shadow roaming like a dream. The ever silent spaces of the east, far folded mists and gleaming halls of morn. Reference: these opening lines have been taken from the poem Tithonus, composed by the well-known poet Alfred Lord Tennyson. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the philosophy of the world. According to him, the world has a decay. Nothing will remain on the earth forever. Even the man who tills that land is buried under the ground. Is due course of time. Now, explanation. Here the poet says that everything in this world obeys the natural law of meeting its end. In the process of evolution, woods existed before the creation of the man. Woods obey the order of natural law. They decay and fall on the ground. Mists gather on the field, where they fall lying on the ground like a burden, because they no longer serve any useful purpose. Now man appears on the scene. He tills the field, grows crops, lives his life till death comes to him. After his death, he is buried under the earth. This is the cycle of life repeating, and we call it evolution. The swan, which enjoys his life for many summers, also dies. The destruction of woods and the death of life indicate a system of natural law which is beneficent. Tithonus further says that only he is consumed by cruel immortality. He withers slowly in his beloved's arms. He looks like a white-haired shadow roaming like a dream. the silent spaces of the east, which appear to be covered by the folds of mists, reflect the bright light of the sun, giving an idea of the coming of morning. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Alas, for this grey shadow, once a man, so glorious in his beauty and thy choice, who madest him thy chosen, that he seemed to his great heart none other than a god. I asked thee, give me immortality. Then didst thou grant mine asking with a smile, like wealthy men who care not how they give, but thy strong hours indignant worked their wills, and beat me down, and married, and wasted me, and though they could not end me, left me maimed to dwell in presence of immortal youth. Immortal is beside immortal youth, and all. I was in ashes, can thy love, thy beauty make amends, though even now close our us the silver star, thy guide shines, in whose tremulous eyes that fill with tears to hear me, let me go, take back thy gift. Why should a man desire in any way to vary from the kindly race of man, or pass beyond the goal of ordinance, where all should pass, as is most meet for all. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Alfred Lord Tennyson expresses his idea about the intention of Tithonus. According to him, it is the old age that pinches him. So he requests his beloved to give him the power of immortality, so that he may live forever and ever as a gods live. Eos and he have been given the power of immortality, but soon he became sad due to old age, and then he preferred death. Explanation. Here the poet says that Tithonus was a handsome and charming man, but he thought that he would not always look like that. He was a man so glorious in his beauty that Eos, the goddess of dawn, at once made her choice to make him as her lover, which made him feel that he was no less than a god. So Tithonus asked Eos to give him immortality, which she immediately granted, like the wealthy men who care not how they give. Tithonus further says that old age played its role in beating him down and wasting him, though it could not cause his death, because of the boon of immortality, which he had received as a gift from the goddess. It made him maimed. He had to dwell in the presence of immortal old age. For him, it was a matter of great sadness that he achieved immortality without immortal youth. So he asked his beloved if she could be of any help in his miserable situation. He sees in his beloved's eyes signs of deep sorrow on his account. Tears gathered in her eyes as she listened to him thus speaking. Thus Tithonus requests his beloved Eos to take back her gift of immortality, which she had bestowed in his favor. Immortality may be good for goods who remain perpetually young, but for a man, immortality is a curse. Death is the end of life for man, where he pauses and does not hope to go beyond it. Natural law decrees that a man would die after old age. Why should he become different from the race of men and go against this natural discipline imposed by God on all men? He wishes earnestly to die like all men because he has become old, but the gifts of immortality which he had received from his beloved Eos now prevents him to experience that which all men experience at the end of life. He has to bear the physical pain associated with the coming of old age forever. He has already grown very old, and therefore he then makes a passionate appeal to his beloved Eos to take back the gift of immortality and release him, so that he may go down to earth and have the pleasure of dying like other men. Living on the earth, it is proper that man should die at the end of his life. Now, the next stanza of the poem. A soft air fans the clouds apart. There comes a glimpse of that dark world where I was born. Once more the old mysterious glimmer steals from thy pure brows and from thy shoulders pure and bosom beating with a heart renewed. Thy cheek begins to redden through the gloom. Thy sweet eyes brighten slowly close to mine. Ere yet they blind the stars and the wild team which love thee, yearning for thy yoke, arise and seek the darkness from their loosened manes and beat the twilight into flakes of fire. Reference will be seen. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Tennyson expresses his idea about Tithonus's mysterious life. According to him, Tithonus has been gifted the power of immortality by her beloved Eos, but he becomes puzzled by that immortality and requests her to take back her gift and let him die as every common man does. Now, explanation. Here, the poet presents a very strange effect of the nature. In the meantime, Tithonus was separated by boon from the earth, where he was born. Addressing Eos, he says that once again he sees the old mysterious glimmer stealing from her pure brows and pure shoulders and her bosom beating with a renewed heart. Her cheek begins to redden through the gloom. Her sweet brightness slowly closes his eyes. Before her glow blinds the stars because they are invisible in daylight, and the wild team which loves her able leadership brings about a transformation of the twilight into flakes of fire. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Lo, ever thus thou growest beautiful in silence, then before thine answer given departest, and thy tears are on my cheek. Why wilt thou ever scare me with thy tears and make me tremble lest a thing learnt? In days far off on that dark earth be true, the gods themselves cannot recall their gifts. Reference will be seen. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Tennyson expresses his idea about the problems of Tithonus. According to him, Tithonus was sad due to the pain and problems of old age. By the goddess's boon, he has become immortal, but the old age cannot be overcome. Though he was too old to work, but due to the boon, he was still alive. But Eos is still glorious and beautiful. Now, explanation. Here, the poet says that Tithona says to her, "Beloved Eos, that she always grows beautiful. Before giving an answer to his question, she departs, leaving traces on her tears on her cheeks." He further says why she should always scare at him with her tears and make him tremble with anxiety. She says that the gods are unable to mollify their gifts. Now, the next stanza of the poem is me, with what another heart, in days far off, and with what other eyes I used to watch, if I be he that watched the lucid outline forming around thee, saw the dim curls kindle into sunny rings, changed with thy mystic change, and felt my blood glow with the glow that slowly crimsoned all thy presence and thy portals, where I lay mouth forehead, eyelids growing dewy warm with kisses, blamier than half opening buds of April, and could hear the lips that kissed, whispering I knew not what of wild and sweet. Like that strange sun, I heard Apollo sing, while I lion like a mist rose into towers. Reference will be seen. Context. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about Tithonus. According to him, Tithonus has become very sad due to the pain of the old age. Beholding his condition, Eos becomes also very sorry. She cannot bear his pain. Now, explanation. Here in these lines, the poet says that Tithonus recalls his association with Eos in the period of their relation between his past and the present. In the days of the past, he used to watch with interest the lucid outline forming around Eos. He saw her dim curls kindling into many rings. Tithonus changed with the mystic change in Eos. He felt his blood glow with the glow that slowly reddened all her presence and her part, while he lay, his mouth, forehead, eyelid grew warm with kisses, happier than the wild and sweet and strange song of Apollo, whose music was responsible for the building of Troy. Now, the last stanza of the poem. Yet hold me not forever in thine east, how can my nature longer mix with thine? Coldly thy rosy shadows bathe me cold, or all thy lights and cold my wrinkled feet upon thy glimmering thresholds, when the stream floats up from those dim fields about the homes of happy men that have the power to die, and grassy barrows of the happier dead, release me and restore me to the ground. Thou seest all things, thou wilt see my grave, thou wilt renew thy beauty morn by morn. I, earth in earth, forget these empty cords, and these returning on thy silver wheels. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet Alfred Lord Tennyson expresses his idea about Tithonus, who has been fully puzzled by the troubles of the crabbed age. According to the poet, Tithonus wants to be released from the bondage of immortality. It is because his immortality had then become a curse to him. Explanation. Here, the poet says that Tithonus appeals to Eos not to hold him forever in her breast. He further speaks how his nature can mix with hers any longer when her rosy shadows bathe him coldly. When all his lights are cold, when his wrinkled feet are cold on her glimmering thresholds, he is reminded of the steam floating up from the dim fields near the homes of the happy men living on the earth, who have the power to die. They are the happier people who are already dead and are buried under the grassy mounds. Lastly, Tithonus makes a final appeal to Eos to release him from the bondage of immortality. He is a human being whose nature is different from that of gods. He has become old while all the gods are enjoying eternal youth. The really wants to be released, and he requests Eos to send him on the earth so that he may die easily. The east would every day take a beautiful shape with its crimson tinge. He would forget by his death the meaningless love affair which had bound them both for some time. Needless to say, according to the legends, he was released from his bondage of suffering in old age because Eos transformed him into a grasshopper. Thank you. This is the end of the poem. Now, the next poem of the Alfred Lord Tennyson, Break, Break, Break. First of all, summary of the poem. In this particular poem, Break, 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 the poet Tennyson expresses his idea about his intense grief over the death of his friend Arthur Hallam. The poet was standing on the seashore and watching the waves striking against it. To him, it appears that this striking expresses the agony of the sea's heart. He feels as if the waves of the sea are also expressing their grief over the death of his dear friend. The poet presents his deep sorrow. He is feeling, but he is unable to give expression to it for want of proper words. He is much puzzled because he cannot express it in words. The poet further says that nature is working as usual. She is indifferent to human sufferings. The fisherman's boy and the sailor's lad are happy and enjoying life. They are unaware of the sadness of the poet's heart. His friend is dead, but the nature is pursuing its activities in the normal case, in the normal course. The ships, having completed their journey, go to the ports. The sailor's lad and fisherman's boy would return to their comfortable home, but the poet's friend has gone forever and he will never return. The poet wants an opportunity to enjoy the company of his friend again and get back the joy of his past life. Hindi Sarans. Prastut Kavita Break 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 ke antargat कवि अल्फ्रेड लॉर्ड टेनिसन अपनी भावनाओं को व्यक्त करते हुए कहते हैं कि उसके प्रिय मित्र आर्थर हॉलम की मृत्यु हो चुकी है। कवि सागर के किनारे खड़ा हुआ है, उसकी लहरों को उसके तट से टकराते हुए देख रहा है। उसके अनुसार सागर की लहरें सागर के तट से टकराकर अपने हृदय के दुख को प्रकट कर रही हैं। उसे ऐसा प्रतीत हो रहा है कि मानो स्वयं सागर भी अपने हृदय का दुख प्रकट कर रहा है। कवि अपने हृदय का गहरा दुख व्यक्त कर रहा है। वह सोच रहा है किंतु अपना भाव व्यक्त नहीं कर पा रहा है क्योंकि उसके पास शब्द नहीं है। वह इतना दुखी एवं परेशान है कि उसके पास कोई शब्द नहीं है कि वह अपना दुख प्रकट कर सके। कवि आगे कहता है कि प्रकृति अपना कार्य हमेशा की भांति कर रही है, वह मानो कष्टों से पूर्णतः अनभिज्ञ है। मछुआरों के बच्चे एवं नाविकों के लड़के प्रसन्न हैं और जीवन का आनंद उठा रहे हैं। उन सभी को कवि के दुखों का ज्ञान ही नहीं है। उसके मित्र की मृत्यु हो चुकी है, किंतु प्रकृति सामान्य रूप से अपना कार्य कर रही है। जहाज अपनी यात्रा पूरी कर रहे हैं, लहर खेल रही हैं। मछुआरों के बच्चे तथा नाविकों के लड़के अपने आराम गृह में लौट रहे हैं, किंतु कवि का मित्र हमेशा हमेशा के लिए चला गया है, वह कभी नहीं लौटेगा। कवि अपने मित्र के साथ एक अवसर चाहता है कि वह पुनः अपने पुराने पुराने आनंद को प्राप्त कर सके। नाउ द डिस्क्रिप्शन अबाउट द पोएम। इन द प्रेजेंट पोएम ब्रेक 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 द पोएट लॉर्ड टेनिसन एक्सप्रेसेस हिज डीप फीलिंग अबाउट हिज डेड फ्रेंड नेम्ड आर्थर हेलम। The death of Arthur Hallam was a great shock to the poet. Tennyson wrote this short elegy on the death of this dear friend. The poem Break, Break, Break has been regarded as one of the most remarkable short elegies in the English poetic world. Here, the poet expresses his deep sorrow and sadness about his friend Arthur Hallam. The very opening line of the poem reveals a very pathetic feeling that has risen in his heart. The poet is standing on the seashore and thinking how the waves of the sea are striking off the shore, and the sound of the waves express the sorrow of the sea's heart. The poet feels that the sea is expressing its sorrow through the sound. Similarly, he also wants to present his own agony and pain, but he is not able to express his own pain. According to him, the fisherman's boy is playing with his sisters on the seashore, and the sons of the seamen also are singing merrily in their boats. All of them are in a joyful mood. They are unaware of the intense grief existing in the poet's heart. The poet remarks that nature is indifferent to the human suffering and sorrow. She is working as usual, but the poet is unhappy and sad. Standing at the seashore, he is thinking about the happy time with his friend. He also thinks that he will be united in their years to come. Thus, the philosophy of the poem is very clear that a man who has died will never come again. The nature is working as usual. The fisherman's boy and the sailor's lad are also playing and making joy, but his heart is aching due to his friend's death. There is no one who may share his agony and pain. It is only he who has to face all the problems and perplexities all alone. Thus, the subject matter and the central idea of the poem, Break, 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 is at the foot of the crag, O sea, but the tender grace of a day that is dead will never come back to me. The poet repents that his happy days will never come back to him. This is merely the cause of the melancholy of the poet. He has no way to escape the problems he has to face. So far as the artistic point of view is considered, the poem Break, Break, Break is a universal poem. There is the beauty, the goodness and the truth. The words which have been chosen by Tennyson, no doubt, are superb. Every word has its value and validity. There is a musical tone, there is a magical spark, and there is the eternal ecstasy and sublimity. The style of the poem is expressive, it is descriptive and deductive. Natural beauty and natural environment have been presented. The poem is an elegy. Sad mood has been presented in an excellent way. There are alliteration, metaphor, apostrophe, personification used. The poem is a ballad. The second and fourth lines end with the same rhyme. Thus, the poem Break, Break, Break has its universal validity. It is the nature of the world that everyone has to go later or sooner, and the loving one has only to repent. Now, the explanations of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. Break, break, break on thy cold grey stones, O sea, and I would that my tongue could utter the thoughts that arise in me. Reference. These lines have been taken from the poem Break, 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 composed by one of the representative poet of the Victorian era, Alfred Lord Tennyson. Context. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about his agony and pain of the soul. The bosom friend of the poet Arthur Hallam has died in his youth. He is in the mood of sadness. He is standing on the seashore and seeing the waves of the sea. Now explanation. Here the poet presents his grief and pain. Because his dear friend Arthur Hallam has died, he hears the sound of the waves striking against the rocks of the sea coast. It seems to him as if the waves, with their sad striking sound, express the sorrows of the sea's heart. Through the medium of the waves, the sea is expressing his deep agony and pain. Expressing his deep agony and pain over the death of the poet's friend. The poet also desired to express his intense grief, but he is finding himself helpless in doing so. He wishes he could express his grief like the sea, but he feels much grief because he cannot give expression to his thoughts. Now, the next stanza of the poem. Oh, well for the fisherman's boy that he shouts with his sister at play. Oh, well for the sailor lad that he signs in his boat on the bay. Reference will be same. Context. In these lines, the poet Lord Tennyson expresses his deep feeling about his dead friend Arthur Hallam. According to him, everything in nature is doing its work as usual. There is no change. There is all happiness. But the poet repents that this nature has no feeling or sympathy about the individual person. Now, explanation. Here the poet Tennyson tells that nature is indifferent to human sufferings and sorrows. He further says that the fisherman's boy is playing with his sister on the seashore. He is shouting out of joy. In the same way, the seaman's boy is singing merrily in his boat. Both of them are in a joyful mood. They are unaware of this intense grief existing in the poet's heart. The poet wants to convey the idea that all other living beings are happy and rejoicing. He is the only man who is sad and very sorrowful. Thus, the poet reveals his own sad feelings in the poem and says that though everything in nature works well, he is really sad. Now, the next stanza of the poem. And the stately ships go on to their haven under the hill. But oh, for the touch of a vanished hand and the sound of a voice that is still. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea and his deep inner feeling about his dead friend Arthur Hallam. According to him, everything in nature is working well as usual. The sun, the moon, the stars, and every natural sight is doing its work properly. But so far as he himself is concerned, he is merely unhappy and sinks into the deep, gloomy sea. He is weeping alone. Now, explanation. Here the poet Lord Tennyson says that nature is fully indifferent to human suffering and sorrow. The majestic ships, after having completed their journey, are returning to the seaport, where they will take rest in safety. The seaports are situated under the hill and are suitable places to give shelter to the ships. Life goes on as usual. Merely, the poet is unhappy and sad. He wants to enjoy the company of his friend, but he is grieved to find that his dead friend has departed from him forever. He is no more now in the world. His voice cannot be heard again. Now, the last stanza of the poem. Break, break, break at the foot of thy crags, O sea, but the tender grace of a day that is dead will never come back to me. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Lord Tennyson expresses his idea about his dead friend Arthur Hallam. According to him, everything in the nature is going on as usual. Standing on a seashore, the poet presents his deep inner sorrow and agony for his friend. To him, everyone is taking joy in his life. The fisherman's boy and sailor's lad are also playing their games. But so far as he himself is concerned, he is fully in deep sorrow due to the death of his friend Arthur Hallam. Explanation. Here, the poet asks the sea to continue its waves striking against the sugged rocks of the shore. The sea is able to express its sorrow through the waves, but he is unable to do so. He remembers the happy days passed in the company of his dead friend. The poet knows that those moments of joy will never return, because his friend now cannot come back to life. The poet further repents that the golden days have already gone along with his dead friend Arthur Hallam. How happy he was in the company of his bosom friend, but now every enjoyment has gone away because his dearest friend Arthur Hallam is no more. Thank you. This was the whole poem of Alfred Lord Tennyson in the course of BA Part 2, Faculty of Arts.